Next, I am joined by author and scholar Barbara Smith. She has been active in movements for social, racial, and economic justice since the 1960s. Her new piece in the Boston Globe is called "White People Now Realize White Supremacy is Coming for Them." Barbara Smith, thanks for joining us again on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you.
And just to get started, I just wanted to hear your reaction to the events on January 6th attack on the Capitol.
Besides the shock, but not surprise, because people have been using that phrase a lot during this terrible administration, shocked, but not surprised, because of course, this individual is capable of anything as low as you think it's possible to go. I was struck by the fact that people were saying that this kind of mob violence, this kind of un-American seditious behavior was just completely out of character for the United States. And I'm thinking, the first thing I think of is like, have you ever heard of lynch mobs? Because everything that was being said about the attack on the Capitol could be said about the more than 4,000 lynchings that occurred in the United States starting in the post-Civil War period and going well into the mid-20th century. So that was one of my thoughts, that I think that as a Black person, an African-American, I think I see what happened quite differently, because I know that kind of terrorism has been visited on my community from time out of mind.
Since George Floyd was murdered, you have written a series of four articles on white supremacy. If you look at this series as a whole, what should our audience know about racism and the system of white supremacy?
One of the things that I'd like to point out is that at the end of the first article, I talk about how it was likely that even though there was so much focus on what was going on racially, after George Floyd was lynched, and also with Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery, et cetera, there was a lot of more focus because of those egregious murders, that even so, that what would eventually happen is that the establishment would just do the Band-Aids performative, not really change anything. But I also warned, this was the last sentence of that article written in June, was that if the nation did not address white supremacy, that it would face continued police brutality, vigilante violence, and would move in the direction and be closer to becoming a failed state. And that's exactly where we are now. That analysis that I included in that first piece, it came to pass. And that was one of the motivations I had for writing the one that was just published. I knew that without addressing and eradicating white supremacy, we were on a very dark path to being a failed state, because there were definitely signs and indications of that. When you had the video of a man being murdered on screen, that the whole world gets to observe and see, you're a failed state. That's the kind of thing that's supposed to happen in those other countries, right? The terrorism, etc. And there it is. It's America. Well, my primary goal when I wrote the first one, which is titled "The Problem Is White Supremacy," is to get people to begin to think about the fact that this is a system. It is a system of oppression. It is coordinated. It is embedded, it is based in a power structure, it is violent, it is vicious, and it has at least one purpose, more than one, but one of its major purposes is to make sure that white people are advantaged and that people of color are not. And that works out economically. So it's not just not liking people of color, specifically Black people, but of course, all people of color, because we all pay that price for living in a white supremacist nation. It's not just about not liking us or feeling superior to us. It's because they're economic gains. And that's what I wanted people to understand. And that particularly in relationship to the very, very intense conversation about racism and policing, because I think there are people to this day, in fact, I know there are people to this day because I see them on my TV who are saying that if we just get the police to do better and not to be so incredibly violent in how they treat people of color who live in the United States, if we can just get them to do better, then everything's solved. Now, with the attack on the Capitol, the conversation has shifted to if we can just get these white supremacist organized groups under control, then everything will be solved. But it's always the wrong answer. That's neither one of those things, getting the police to reform, or on the other hand, getting the white gangs, the white racist gangs to reform. We're still going to have white supremacy as a system.
Thank you for that. And you title the piece, or the piece is titled, and you talk about, you write, white people realize white supremacy is coming for them. Can you explain this sentence?
I like that sentence because it says very succinctly that now that white people realize that white supremacy can be dangerous even to them, they are paying more attention to it and they're actually talking about it, but they're not talking about it as a system. They're talking about it as fringe hate groups that are armed. That's how they're seeing it now. And I guess it's baby steps, but I've always known that white supremacy was not good for white people either. But now it's just very crystal clear because they were gunning for white people. Their worldview meant that certain white people were traitorous to them. But of course, there was also the other myth that a certain individual had won the election. What a coincidence that the people who believed that that certain individual had won the election were wearing pro-Holocaust t-shirts and carrying Confederate flags. What a coincidence.
Do you want to go into that a little bit more?
The point I'm making is that there's a lot of focus nowadays on this lie, the big lie that the individual got people to believe, and that he incited them with the big lie because he was telling that lie for months on end, even before the election, that if he did not win, that would show that the election was stolen and that it was rigged. So people are focusing on that, but they're not focusing on why are certain people disposed to believing that lie. I made the point in the new op-ed that that white supremacy is a driver for the success of that person's presidency. So it's no coincidence then that the people who ran into the Capitol and were responsible for the deaths of five other human beings, it's no surprise that they have those kind of views. And I also make the point that that is a very fundamental base of 45's deep appeal. He was promising to those 74 million people who voted for him, more people voted for him this time than they did in 2016. What does that tell you? He is providing something to them. He is offering something to them that they dearly, dearly lust after. And what that is unbridled, free reign, white supremacy. They are concerned, and that's a nice word, they're incensed that soon they will no longer be the majority population by numbers in the United States. Doesn't mean that they're not going to have white skin privilege and that white supremacy isn't going to continue long after those numerical proportions changed. But they also had to deal with the great insult of a Black president, and they have to deal with the insult of people of color being assertive about our rights, as was so very vividly shown by the massive demonstrations that happened after George Floyd's lynching. So they're just aggrieved. They're aggrieved. They want this to be a white man's country, and that's what he was selling them. That's what he was offering to them. I think also it's important to know about white supremacy and white racism that looking at the 74 million people who voted for the former president, that I'm not saying that all 74 million people are card-carrying white supremacists, those who voted for him. But I am saying that they're all right with white supremacy because he is a white supremacist. They are all right with where he's coming from, the babies in the cages and being separated from the parents and the SHIT whole countries, all of the things that he has put out there. He has like an encyclopedia of like these racist attacks and the 74 million people who voted for him and the 87% of Republicans today, according to recent polling, who have no problems with what he has done and do not hold him accountable for that attack on the Capitol. That shows that we have a big problem.
Now, Barbara, as we look toward the Biden administration, obviously white supremacy won't magically get erased, but what do you hope for as we see a new president enter the White House?
All we can do is continue to speak truth and to organize. In the previous op-ed that you and I actually did talk about back in November, when I had written a speech for President-elect Biden, that's exactly what I was trying to get at. This is what you could do. And that speech that I wrote for him was kind of the next segue coming out of the Hamer-Baker plan that I'd written about late summer to do something on the scale of a Marshall Plan to eradicate white supremacy. I don't see anyone except for me talking about eradicating white supremacy, at least not publicly. And it's not that I'm so naive as to think that just by saying it could happen, but I want people to think about, like, would that be a good thing? Is there a way to possibly work on that? Could that be achieved? Not just to kind of do the cosmetic stuff around the edges. Those administration appointments don't address that. The only way you address it is to explicitly name it and then to try to do something about it.
And Barbara Smith, as we wrap up here today, I would like to give you the final word.
I believe in movements. I believe in organizing. I believe in grassroots people speaking up and figuring out how, working together, how we can achieve the goals that we think are important. This may seem like a not on the topic, but I was reading articles this morning about the situation of people in prison who are not receiving, in most cases, the vaccine. Our mass incarceration prison industrial complex is disproportionately people of color, and they cannot have access to this solution. That's the kind of thing that we focus on as organizers. We're not so interested in the cosmetics. I think that with the vice president elect, that's happening quite a bit. People are congratulating themselves. And then when you ask them, and when was the last time you spoke out and tried to do something about the great racial and economic disparities in your community, it would be crickets because they wouldn't have anything to say.
Well, Barbara Smith, thank you so much for adding your voice and your ideas.
Thank you, EP.